You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Oh, welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's, don't you fucking put that on the podcast. Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Lovely co-host.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, y'all. Today's guest is Tony Award-winning Broadway and TV star Laura Benanti, here to chat with us about Tori Amos's Little Earthquakes and My Fair Lady.
I think I wrote that wrong. It sounds like Tori Amos has an album called My Fair Lady. Well, you live long enough, kids. Anyway, Laura be double-dipping with those two albums. We would like to double-dip Laura Benanti. Is that a thing? I didn't think that was a thing. Why are you laughing? Just read your line.
Absolutely. She's fierce.
Thank you for reading that line without complaint.
I got you, girl.
Well, we just love Laura Benanti. Since her Broadway debut as Rebecca Luker's understudy and then replacement in The Sound of Music when she was fresh out of high school, she's been electrifying audiences and critics and become one of the brightest bold-faced names in New York.
She was nominated for Tonys for her star turns in She Loves Me, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, Into the Woods, Swing, and Gypsy.
For which she won, playing the title role opposite Patti LuPone's legendary roast. But this isn't about Patti.
For once.
I'm obsessed with Laura because I think she's the only musical theater soprano who's got that diva edge. Mm. Did you see her as the Baroness in the TV version of Sound of Music Live with Carrie Underwood?
Yes, I did.
It was like Vivian Leigh.
Absolutely.
I mean, first of all, she's so beautiful, right?
Gorgeous.
But better than that, bitch can arch an eyebrow, you know what I'm saying? And also just the dresses did it. But it's the attitude. I mean, to me, Laura has...
She walks in and she owns the fucking
room. Has so much X factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of what made her She Loves Me and, mm-hmm. and her My Fair Lady so almost surprisingly incredible. Not mm-hmm. that I didn't think she was going to be incredible, but she really has that musical comedy, like, sparkle mm-hmm. that just galvanizes the scenes. I mean, I buy her as Patti's daughter
right.
because even though she has such a different singing voice than Patti, she walks onto the stage and she just kind of commands, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and I live for that.
And she's very, you know, it's very, you know, Streisand-y. Like, mm-hmm. she has that equal mix of, like, spark and power, but also vulnerability. And, you know,
yeah.
one minute she's singing Let Me Entertain You as a striptease, and then she's singing, you know, Will He Like Me and She Loves Me, and you're crying. So... truly a star. And the thing I will say about the Sound of Music Live
is back to that she got the receipts.
It was so crazy because I remember after, you know, that was the first of the big TV live musicals, and everyone couldn't stop talking about Laura Benanti, and they were talking about how she really overshadowed, you know,
others.
My girl Carrie, whom I love. But it was interesting because Laura, at the end of that, I was like, oh, I wanted the captain to end up with the Baroness.
Yeah, know? I know, right? How crazy.
I know. So anyway, but...
In fairness, I just want to say, for anyone listening who remembers the Rebecca Luker revival of The Sound of Music, mm-hmm. and then subsequently the Laura Benanti revival of The Sound mm-hmm, of Music, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I didn't see that production with either one of them, sad to say, but I have it on good authority that Jan Maxwell, as the Baroness, would have had similar... charismatic effect on the mm-hmm, audience, mm-hmm, the late, mm-hmm. great Jan Maxwell. But anyway, continue.
Anyway.
Please go on.
But Benanti's wonderful. I actually think one of the first things actually it might have been the first thing. I think it was before She Loves Me. I saw her in the City Center production of Most Happy Fella.
Oh, I wish I had seen that. Was she mm-hmm. My Heart Is So Full of You?
Yes. Mm. Yes. And it was wonderful. Her and J. Armstrong Johnson.
I think oh, yes. We've discussed this production before.
J. Armstrong Johnson is what you call your, anyway, so that was my first introduction to Laura. And
her Rosabella. Rosabella. That's her name.
And after that, of course, I know
so full.
My heart was so full of her. And then, yeah. of course, you know, I let her entertain me. And
She
became my little lamb.
Well, you know, I saw Gypsy on Broadway. Well, we'll get into all this with Laura. Mm. Well, let's talk about Tori Amos. Because okay. I'm curious what someone of your generation has to say about Miss Amos.
You know, Tori Amos, I kind of dove in with our Michael Jackson interview, Michael R. Jackson, and
is that like R. Corey Hay, the publicist?
What?
There's a publicist named R. Period Corey Hay.
Oh,
that is like R.
That's
Michael.
Funny.
You mean like our Michael R. Jackson?
Yeah, our Michael R. Jackson.
Yeah.
I dove in on Under the Pink, and then of course Little Earthquakes, and
you dove in Under the Pink,
honey,
to your Rosebud,
to my J. Armstrong Johnson. But, and those aren't even, like, the most celebrated Tori albums, I don't think. But I...
Well, they're very celebrated. I mean, they're the big ones from the beginning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What did she do after
First
that?
First and second.
Was Songs for the Choir Girl Hotel. Boys
for Pele.
Songs in the Choir Girl Hotel. I mean, those came right after that, and they were really huge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Tori fans are rabid. It's like Darren Criss or Mayor Pete. Like,
stop.
You know, they Like, I ask a Tori fan, like, their favorite Tori album. Like, it happened with Michael Jackson, too. He's like, I said that was my most influential.
I didn't say it was my favorite.
You know, they really... Because, yeah, I mean, yeah. because the albums are... I think it's funny to, like, a non-Tori fan, because you'll be like, oh, they all sound like Tori Amos.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, to a Tori fan, which I have been one for many years, they each one is, like, so different. Like, yeah. you know, it might as well be, like, you know, Gypsy and Sweeney Todd.
Right, right. What could we call Tori fans?
To name two random examples of an artist's work. The artist being Stephen Sondheim.
Right. Stephen Sondheim. What would we call Tori fans? Like, you know, Gaga fans are like the Little Monsters. Joan Rivers called her Joan Rangers. What would be Tori?
Like, I feel like they already have a name.
But
you know?
What is it?
I don't know. I don't want to, like, culturally
appropriate
the Tori Amos.
It'd be like the Tories, the...
Well, I went out with this guy when I was in college, named Jared.
Went out, or like went out in quotes, or like...
No, we dated for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we dated for like a couple of months. It was actually like my longest relationship to date. But, I mean, to this date. But, anyway, he was obsessed with Tori, and he used to play later on, became a very successful drag queen in San Francisco named Suppository Spelling.
Oh, that's I've heard of.
Yeah, she's like a big deal, yeah. like Tranny Shack and all that. And and I'm still obsessed with Tori. But I remember Jared playing for me like bootlegs of Tori singing, I want to say Evergreen.
What?
Like at like weddings, like when she was like
the Academy Award winning Barbara Streisand number.
Yes.
Anyway.
And because Tori is the voice. I mean, that we get into that, I guess, a little bit with Laura, but it's like, I think part of what you often find, like someone like our friend Brian Nash, who's a brilliant musical director, and composer and lyricist, and, he is obsessed with Tori Amos. He's even done a solo show where he does the whole album of Boys for Pele, just himself. Anyway, but, Brian studied voice and, you know, opera and stuff in college, and has an amazing singing voice. And, you know, he clearly is someone who gravitated to Tori, well, obviously for her piano, but also for the singing. And I think you find a lot of musical theater people. And I remember in high school, like, my same friends that I would obsess about Patti LuPone and Andrew Lloyd Webber with were the ones that got me into Tori Amos, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
Shout out to Jamie Stern. Miss you, girl.
Shout out. Yeah, Tori, the thing that that struck me was her voice, because it is so, like, I'm trying to think of who I would compare her to these days.
You mean in musical theater?
No, just, like, a contemporary singer. Almost like, I want to say, like, a female Ben Folds. Like, it's very, like, piano-based, like, almost a little music theater-y, in, like, the structure of the songs, or, like, I don't know, but the voice is very, it seems very healthy.
You very know, healthy. She is not afraid to mix in the head
yeah,
tones.
Mix, yeah.
But she will go for a full belt when mm-hmm. she wants it.
A full yell. Really yell.
Yeah, I like a yell. You know that mm-hmm. about me. Mm-hmm. I will Yelp review a yell. I won't give you hell for yell.
No, girl.
I won't tell you not to yell. You yell, I fell.
Come out of my shell.
Thank you. Oh, no, enough about that. Your J. Armstrong Johnson doesn't belong in this conversation.
Well, let's talk about My Fair Lady. So,
yes, let's do that.
Just real quick, because something about My Fair Lady that I think is important is the journey. It's like a hero's journey that Eliza takes, you know? Mm,
please, continue.
For instance, you know, she starts out on the streets. She's, you know, selling, you know, flowers for a shekel.
Please tell the listener about my air quotes on flowers.
Yeah, selling her, quote, flowers, her rosebud.
I mean, has there ever been a production where she's just, like, a flat-out hooker?
Not to my knowledge.
Not yet. So. I mean, like, Sweet Charity, like, taxi dancer, everybody knows that's, like, a euphemism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, well, why are we so quick to say Tottenham Court Road is all... You know,
that's
PG
what I call 13. It. Never mind Tottenham Court Road, sir. It's the same thing with Breakfast. Speaking of Audrey Hepburn vehicles,
yeah.
It's the same thing with Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know.
Well, people do say that about Breakfast at Tiffany's, right?
Right, but it's like very euphemistic. It's like.
But like, am I the first person to ever say that about My Fair Lady?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I would like you to find some.
I'll get our intern on that. Who would your ideal intern for us be? Like, if you could choose any. Chorusman or
well, my first thought actor. Is just J. Armstrong Johnson.
Sure, but he's a little overqualified. Who's like a dumb twink?
I'm allowed to answer this.
Yes, the listeners are dying to know. If you're listening, dumb twink.
I don't even know this guy, so I'm just saying it because I think he's so cute.
Uh-huh.
But the guy that played Che and Evita at City Center.
Oh, the guy that we saw at the Ice Palace.
Oh, right, yeah.
Him. What's his name?
What is his name? I'm sure I can't remember.
That's interesting, though. He'd be a good intern.
Probably not.
I mean, maybe he has a good work ethic. He seems very energetic.
That's true. He does seem energetic. But I don't know. A lot of energy might scare me. I might need somebody more chill. Like, what if we just, like, had Pixie? And I'd just be like, Pixie, can you look that up? And you'd just be like, no.
Although Pixie is a research queen, you know.
Yeah, so. But, like, that's, like, for their own projects.
Anyway.
Cesar.
Anyway, I don't know what we're talking about. My
Fair
Lady.
Ideal intern.
Oh, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, by the way, intern's not a euphemism.
Oh, right. Well, of course.
No, I just wanted them to be attractive.
Right.
For my aesthetic pleasure.
Right, but no, we are a safe work environment.
Yes, we are.
We practice, what is it? Not sexual harassment.
Yes, we practice not sexual harassment. It's in our mission statement.
Yeah, it's in our mission statement. We should add that to the theme song.
Broken records. The album you wouldn't shut up about.
Broken records. We won't sexually harass your ass. Lance Horn, if you could brush that up a bit.
Then we list, like, famous sexual harassers.
Yeah, like Harvey Weinstein, Bill
Donald
Cosby.
Trump.
Bill Cosby.
All those pigs who grabbed your rump. We broadcast this podcast. Oh, who's our dream sexual harassment guest?
With hopes that we someday might get Kevin
Woody
Spacey.
Allen.
Oh, okay. Woody Allen's better than Kevin Spacey.
This is terrible. We're going to get
terrible.
Kicked off the broad.
So...
Oh, we have an announcement. This
oh,
is probably
yeah.
going to be out there. We're going to be joining the Broadway Podcast Network.
Yes, BPN, baby.
So that's right. Someday when the advertisement bucks start rolling in, we'll not only be splitting them with Broadway World, but also with the Broadway Podcast Network.
Yes. And if you're anyone's listening and you have connections to, what are like the top three products we want to get advertising
well,
from?
Well, Gerald Steiner.
Gerald Steiner.
All the way. Dickinson's Wipes.
And listen to our Santino
and those calm,
lavender
pills that we
my
like.
Everything. I eat them like Flintstone vitamins.
But Flintstone vitamins don't give you those interesting burps.
Lavender burps, baby.
Broken record, broken record, broken record.
And she was like, I want a snack. I want to watch a song.
And sounds like me.
I know. I was like, same. And then we just like ate Madeline's. And
aww.
Then she came back into bed with us. But I never sleep well when she sleeps in bed with us. Because she's just like... I cannot believe how much she just rolls around. It's crazy to me.
Yeah. She's three?
Two.
Two?
Yeah, she's two and a half.
She seems very...
She's mature.
Worldly.
Yeah, she's in the threes program at school.
Oh, wow.
Because they went... She would, they So they, like, you have to basically, like, audition for preschool, which is insane. And we were in the twos, and Ella turns to the woman. She goes, excuse me, are they babies? The woman was like... Do you want to go upstairs? And then she just
are
was
they
like,
babies?
Excuse me, are they babies? That's and they were older than her at that point.
And that's so fascinating to me. Kids who, like, you know, a lot of kids have, like, their baby dolls and they push their strollers and they don't see themselves as babies, you know?
No.
I remember that when I was a kid, too. It's like, I was so fascinated by babies when I was, like, you know, three.
Totally. It's but so she doesn't see herself as a baby because I've had to say lately, like, Ella, I am the mommy and you are the kid. Like, you can't talk to me like that. And she's like, you can't talk to me like that.
Wow.
She's so sassy.
What's her zodiac sign?
She is an Aquarius, but she's not an Aquarius at all. She's the least Aquarius I've ever met. She like she seems honestly more like a... Like a Virgo, maybe even a Scorpio.
Wow. Scorp. Maybe that's her
rising.
Her rising.
Yeah.
I mean, did you do her whole chart?
I should. I need to do it.
Yeah.
What are you?
I'm Cancer.
Oh.
But everything's Cancer. And it's
I love a Cancer.
Me too. We're both Taurus, so like.
Oh, I love a Taurus.
Yeah. The love is strong.
Yeah, my sister's a Taurus.
Cancers are so like sensitive and just caring and
just homebodies.
Homebodies. Yes. The best. The best.
Yeah.
All right, so we're rolling. We'll just
Oh, perfect.
Launch.
I loved all that conversation. Yeah, we can use all that. It's all gold. But we're here in the beautiful home of Laura Venanti. Could not be more overjoyed to be here.
Thank you.
Laura, I've loved you for so long. I was just thinking, I remember the first time I ever saw you was like, it might have been while you were in The Sound of Music.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was a reading at the York.
Summer?
Summer, yeah.
Oh,
Edith Wharton adaptation.
Yes.
Oh.
And I just remember, I knew your name, I think, from, like, headlines about, maybe you had already, like, taken over even.
Yes, I had,
And it was, so I knew you were, like, this really talented, like, really young, you know, soprano. And that was all I knew. But you came out and you were so beautiful and you were such a good actress and you were just like so charismatic and you know, you were just such a star. Mom. And I was like, I'm dying. You know.
That was such a dark project. Mark Jacoby played my dad, who like I feel like he R's me in that. Is there like a isn't there a
maybe.
Yeah, I feel like there's some incest happening.
Oh my god.
I was so young too. I was just like,
I remember being like, and then there's this part that's really horrible, but the rest of it's amazing.
The music's gorgeous.
The music's gorgeous. But I do remember.
Was Melissa Errico in that?
No.
No. But you know what else? Did I also see, did you do a reading of Anna Karenina where she played Anne Crumb's part and you played her part? Or maybe I'm conflating
I don't know.
People and places.
I have done so many readings.
Sure you have.
And I'm so old now.
I thought about it in the way I was like, I'm going to tell her about Summer. And then I was like, I don't even remember the readings I've done. I'm so sure Laura might
I do
have
remember that
on
one
that.
Though, because I remember it being like very dark.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
being like, wow, I'm crying really hard on stage.
Well, it informed how I like thought of you.
Yeah.
I was like, she's this like dark soprano. Like this emo, you know.
No.
Like I mean when you said Tori Amos, I was like, of course.
That's Tori Amos, the best.
We interviewed Michael Jackson, who wrote A Strange Loop the other day.
Oh my gosh.
And Tori Amos was his too. He had Under the Pink.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean I think for so many people, I mean you guys are a little bit younger than me, but that was such a big I mean, she was big for everybody, but especially I feel like for musical theater people of our like generation, because Tori's stuff was so performative and so vocal and
piano
complicated
based too. It wasn't just like grunge guitar rock.
Yes, exactly.
It wasn't just like growling and playing the guitar.
Yeah.
She was like telling a story. She was emotive.
Yeah, I can hear that. But what if I'm a mermaid in these jeans of hers with her name still on it? But I don't care, 'cause sometimes I said sometimes I hear my voice and it's been here silent all these years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she had trained singer?
Because her voice is so, like, mixy sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she used to play in piano bars when she was, like, a kid. When
I
she
think
lived...
Superfan played me, like, tapes of her at a wedding singing, like, Barbra Streisand songs and stuff from that era. Yeah.
Her dad was, like, a preacher. They lived in Virginia, like, outside of D.C., and then this is how much I love her. And she, when she was, like, a very young person, she was playing at piano bars because she was going to, like, a super prestigious music school. Mm-hmm. And they basically, like, kicked her out for being improvisational and not just sticking to, like, Bach and all of that.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then she just started, like, doing her own thing. I love her. I love her. She's the one person that if I met, I think I just would, like,
have
not,
you not
be
met her.
I've never met her.
I'm surprised. I was thinking I would have expected them to try to get you to do her musical.
I would have done that in a heartbeat.
But it hasn't been done in New York, though.
It has not. They did it in London. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we've tweeted at each other. Like, the day that she tweeted at me, I literally had, like, a mental breakdown. My husband was like, are you okay? Are you a grown woman having, like, a total, like a true meltdown, like, hyperventilating? I couldn't believe that she even, like, knew who I was. And then Laura Haywood went to see her show and got her to sign her
Broadway Girl NYC Laura Haywood
program for me, saying that she wished I was there, and it might be in my bedroom. I don't know. I'm not sure where it is.
The shrine.
Yeah.
Were you into other like pop music and stuff as a kid too, or was Tori more?
I mean, I was super into musical theater, like, all growing up, and. Then when I got to, like, middle school, I was like, if I want to have any friendships at all, I got to keep this more on the DL. I was very, like, Tori Amos was my A number one, but I really loved the Beatles. Like, I'm super into the Beatles. And then, of course, I got into Dave Matthews Band because...
Of course, you have to.
Right, I have to. But I actually genuinely did like them. And then, like, I loved Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
I loved Cat Stevens. Mm-hmm. I loved more of, like, the sort of 70s.
Right, Harry Chapin.
I love Harry Chapin.
Yeah.
Anything that's storytelling, I'm, like, pretty into. But I was also very into Pearl Jam. I was, like, kind of in love with Eddie Vedder.
I had
a crush on Eddie Vedder. And so I cut my hair to look like his hair.
Wow.
In high school, where I'm like, that's not the move.
Were you cool in high school?
No.
How many kids were, like, in your class? Like,
89 kids in my graduating class.
You knew everyone.
I knew every single person. Yeah, I was the president of my class, but only because nobody else wanted to. I was just like, I need to be doing things at all times. Like, I really definitely thrive when I'm doing a lot of things. So I was like, I'll be in the musical and I'll be president of the class and I'll, like, I just turned everything into a production. We had to do color day where it was like, everybody wears yellow. And I was like, we're all suns and we walk into Here Comes the Sun and you're going to dance. Everyone was like, calm down.
What were your, like, high school musical roles?
So when I was a freshman in high school, I played Golda in Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes.
My sophomore year, I was Fiona in Brigadoon.
Okay.
And my junior year, I played Dolly Levi in Hello Dolly, but up the octave.
No.
In the Patrice Menzel key, because I'm a soprano.
She did that before.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
then was your director, like, super gay and knew about that?
No, our director was the science teacher. Her name was Doc, and she was awesome.
Her
I
name
loved
was Doc.
Her. Yeah.
Our science teacher was named Doc.
I mean, aren't they all?
I guess they
That's
all.
Right.
Are, yeah.
But yeah, we did not have, like, I would not call it a strong, like, arts program. I
please
was
tell me there's
program.
Video of your.
Yeah, so of course.
Oh my God.
Of course there's. I'm going to raise the roof. I'm
going to
carry on. I mean, it's kind of magic. It's like.
That sounds
like, but it's ridiculous. Also, I look like a 50-year-old woman. Like, I really do.
Just like bouffant and makeup.
And just also my face. Like, I was born with this face. Like, I've always looked. I came out like this.
Yeah.
And Ella, my daughter's the same way.
I was like, oh my God, little Laura.
She's like a 45-year-old gay man. Like, we're born that way. And I feel like now I'm just, like, growing. People are like, you look so much younger now. I'm like, I'm just growing into myself. I've always looked like this.
Yeah.
And it was just creepy when I was 11.
Oh my God.
But I won the Paper Mill Playhouse Rising Star Award for that.
Wow.
And that's how I got into the business because I won their award. Then they,
So you were 17, 18?
I was 16.
Oh my God.
I was 16. And then I sang, I could have danced all night at their, like, New Year's Eve show.
Oh.
And then I did, what was the play? Jane Eyre, but the play, not the musical. Mm-hmm. And Anne Hathaway was my understudy.
Oh, my God.
I know. I love that. So funny. And then the next show I did there was Man of La Mancha. Mm-hmm.
Were you the niece?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And who, then they...
Was that... what's her name?
Yes.
From
Judy.
Judy McClane.
Yeah. Yeah. She's incredible.
Yeah.
And then they recommended me for the Sound of Music to audition for Liesl, and I auditioned for mm-hmm. Liesl, and then they cast me as the understudy.
And were your parents like, this is all great, but you need to go to school, or, I mean, you know, your mom's a voice teacher, right?
Yeah, and so both my parents were actors,
yeah.
And when I was like a year old, they got divorced. I'm yeah. fine. And I'm fine. No. Nobody worry. Thousands of dollars worth of therapy. And then my mom remarried my dad, Sal, who's a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. So, like, I watched my dad, Marty Vidnovic, growing up. I watched his performances. Certainly my mom sang all the time in her studio. Her voice studio was in our home. So I would, like, sit with her while she would give voice lessons. She started giving me voice lessons super young just because I wanted her to. Mm-hmm. But they were very insistent that I not be, like, a professional actor as a child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They told me that when I turned 18, I could basically do what I wanted.
Yeah.
When I was 17, I auditioned for The Sound of Music. And at that point, I'd gotten into NYU.
Yeah.
And I planned to go there. And then when I got...
to, like, Cap 21?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I went for 2 weeks. I didn't go to a single class. I went for 2 weeks to, like, the... whatever it's called. Yeah, like
orientation.
Orientation.
Yeah. Like, in the dorms?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you were on Broadway.
Yeah.
You're like, sorry, guys, Broadway calls.
I was like, sorry about it. And then every time I was like, I'm going to go back to school. And I got into Columbia and, like, I would just get another job. And finally I was like, I'm just going to, I like this. Yeah. You know, I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, and when was Swing? I mean, you got nominated for Tony right away pretty much, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, okay, so just going back a little, because I know it's one of your other albums, My Fair Lady. Mm-hmm. So was that, I mean, you said you sang... what the Paper Mill Rising Stars Award, they were like did they say you can sing whatever you want?
I didn't sing it at the award show. I won the award and then they invited me to sing. Like part of
that's even more special.
Yeah,
right?
Part of the like win was getting to sing at their like New Year's Eve.
And were
show.
They like, you're a soprano, you're singing this, or were they like, what would you like to sing?
No, I Patrick Parker has been like a huge mentor of mine over there, and he knew my dream role was Eliza Doolittle, and he was like, do you want to sing this?
I mean, was that, no, that was after the previous revival, I guess, because that...
No, it was before.
Oh, wow.
I think it was before, because I feel like I was a senior in high school when Melissa...
Because, I mean, you must have just been like, I don't want that part. I mean, you could almost have been, I mean, if you were playing Maria in The Sound
of Music.
I think
I was like 16.
Yeah.
I think I was like 16 face. When it was happening. I know, but I looked 50, so it would have been fine.
Mrs. Higgins.
Oh, my God. Totally. Totally Mrs. Higgins.
So, I mean, having seen you as Eliza, I can understand, you know, and I could have understood before seeing you how great you were in it, but you're great in lots of roles. What was it specifically about that was such a passion for you?
Well, I love a transformation. Like, yeah. It's the same for me with Gypsy. Mm-hmm. Like, I love someone who's like A to Z, and then you have to hit all the letters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just think that's so interesting, because so often female roles, especially in sort of classical musical theater, excuse me, can be very like one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up playing... Certainly when you're like an ingenue, you're sort of limited in terms of your range, what you're allowed to show. And like pathos is not one of those things.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
And so what I love about Eliza Doolittle had always been her sort of courage, how smart she is. I love playing intelligent characters. Sorry, I cough. Sorry. And just what she sort of gets to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always something lost and something gained in those transformative roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of love the double-edged sword of that.
Mm-hmm.
I love showing, like, the pain of it. That even if you get what you want, it still can be really painful.
Mm-hmm. You played that so beautifully. I mean, when I think about My Fair Lady, and I don't even know the first time I saw it. I definitely grew up with the movie and just have always known it. But I wouldn't have described it 2 years ago as Eliza having lost something in the end.
Right.
And my memories of it and the way I think of it is only a win. And I saw so much of that loss in your performance. I mean,
Thank
it was
you.
So I mean, the pathos was a part of the end, too.
Yeah.
But although what I loved most about your performance was the just kind of musical theater.
Comedy.
Well, not just the comedy, but like the oomph, you know? I mean, just the way you walked around that house and, you know, even on the street, it reminds me of Patti LuPone because it's like that, just that kind of owning the ground, you know? It's just that something about in your body. It just, I noticed in She Loves Me Too, way you cross the stage. It's just this sort of, it's like you're going over there and you're kind of owning the distance between you and that spot before you even get there. We're just aware, everyone else on stage is aware of your intended path. It's just a force. It's not something that people can probably learn to do. As I'm telling you this, I'm noticing the Tony Award on top of the TV.
It's like, hey!
So casual. Oh, it's on top of the piano.
Yeah, okay. It's on top of the
but
piano.
Underneath the TV, just with other Glinda. Crap, a bobblehead, whatever.
I used to actually drape my husband's, like, intramural, like, soccer trophies over it, and he was like, please don't do that. He's like, not only is it weird for you, it, like, makes me actually feel terrible about myself. That you're like, these two things are equal. He's like, they're not. I will say that's something that I learned from Patti. I think before I met Patti, I used to apologize for myself a lot. And she beat that out of me.
Yeah.
In the most loving way.
There's this story I've heard you tell in interviews, and it's so fascinating, about when you were first in rehearsals for Gypsy, and you said you were really taken aback by, I think it was Arthur Lawrence, the way he was treating you guys.
Yeah.
And Patti was just so calm and just, responded with such grace, and she taught you that. Can you talk about that?
It was unbelievable. He, so we sat down for our first table.
This is for City Center.
Yeah, this is for City Center. Yeah. I had not known him other than my audition. We sit down for the table read. And I think my first line is like, good morning, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, good morning. And he goes, no.
Oh my God.
I have the first line of the show, and it's just no. And I was like, okay.
Oh my God.
And then he just rode me so hard. He rode everybody really hard. And where I truly began to crumble and like fall apart, she was like, thank you. Oh, that's so interesting. Thank you. Oh, great. Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. Like, she just showed what it is to be like a collaborative woman who is also very confident.
But
in
herself. I've known Patti for 20 years. I'm shocked to hear that story. I mean, I think of if anyone remotely infringes upon what she wants to do, her coming down like the, you know, fury of hell. I mean,
But I think she had wanted to play this part for a really long time.
Yeah.
I think she knew it was a tenuous situation.
Right, so she knew what she had to do.
Yeah, she knew that she had to make this work, and so she was going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And she did.
That's amazing. I mean, that's not at all what I think of her doing, but it makes sense that that's how those two personalities.
She is extremely collaborative. Look,
I do think of her as collaborative. I don't think of her as taking crap at all. Or even minor infractions.
Yeah, I think it depends on who it's from.
Yeah.
You know, right, I think in this case, it was Arthur Lawrence. He was 90 years old.
Yeah.
He
wrote the book. Yeah.
And he was going to be directing it. And if she wanted to be good in it, she had to, navigate that relationship, and she did it beautifully.
I mean, I've heard you both talk about how, and maybe even other people from the production, he had this idea of how Tyne had done it, how Angela had done it, how those productions had been, and at a certain point, him giving way to being open to what you guys were bringing to the table, and that being kind of what led to this, you know, really beautiful and originally authentic that you created. What am I trying to ask? Do you think on the other side of that you still got something good out of his sort of starting off not like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as hurtful as it was, he did sort of break me down in a way that was kind of helpful for that character because he brought me to Louise. You know, I started just so fragile, so wanting to be loved and accepted. And he brought me to that place in a real way. And I also will say, after 2 weeks, I basically quit. And I said, I can't do this. You are, don't want me. You are
to cruel. Him. You said that
you are cruel to me and I don't need this.
I mean, that's big balls. I mean, did you have agents and managers supporting you in that?
No,
or?
No, I just was like, I can't take this anymore. Mm. It wasn't big balls. It was actually like fragility, I think.
Yeah.
You know, if I had been in a different time in my life, I would have just done what Patty did, but it's like, I couldn't.
Had you told her you were quitting?
It's not like I was like, I quit. I was just like, hey, you clearly don't want me. Yeah. So like, let's call it. Mm-hmm. And I went home thinking, well, this is it. And then Patty spoke to Arthur and was like, Laura is not a person you need to break down. Laura is a person you need to build up. Mm. And she's like, I don't know her very well because we'd only known each other for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. She's like, but I can tell you that. Mm. And he called me. And he apologized. He said, I spoke with Patty and I'm sorry. You know, he was like, you know, I see you as like, I don't see myself as this, but he's like, I see you as, you know, very beautiful and successful and young. And I assumed you would be sort of cocky. Sure. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm, if anything, I'm like extremely insecure. Mm-hmm. And when you say hurtful things to me, it's hard for me to get back up.
Yeah.
And he was like, I am sorry. And from that day forward, he's continued to help me, but he did it in a way that I could hear, and I really appreciated it.
It sounds so My Fair Lady.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah. But, you know, to your
Patty as, what's her name? As Mrs. Higgins.
As Mrs. Right Higgins, yeah. Exactly. But to your earlier question, I think basically it's because Patty said yes, 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 yes to everything he wanted her to try, and then it still wasn't quite right, then he was able to say yes to her. And once he was able to say yes to her, then he was able to say yes to the rest of us. Mm-hmm. But she was the captain of that ship from day one. Mm-hmm. And we built these authentic relationships off stage, which I think really, which I really think informed our onstage relationships.
Yeah. Oh, they were so rich. I mean, I saw the show on Broadway 10 times and I saw it at City Center 3 times. And I mean, and that was true always. I mean, even toward the end of the run, Patty seemed like some of her scenes with the groups and everything was getting faster and faster and faster.
Sure.
But always when she was on stage with Ewan Boyd.
Yeah.
And in her numbers.
Yeah.
You know, she was alive. And the scenes with you guys really were always, I mean, in that final dressing room scene.
Yeah.
It seemed to me as a multiple audience member that scene was never the same.
It was never the same. Mm-hmm. Never the same.
It was dangerous and exciting. I could have imagined it going 12 different ways at any second. I mean,
and it would. I mean, that's what was really amazing. It was like two people who just were like, "I trust you. I love you. Let's go." And it was. It will remain. It makes me want to cry. It will remain, I think, the greatest experience of my life to be on stage with a person that I really genuinely love, like family, like the way you love family, you know, and to feel safe in their presence, safe enough to really explore all the damage in this relationship, you know, and it was cathartic in a way, you know.
Yeah, it's cathartic just to watch. I mean, totally. You know.
It was amazing. But, you know, for me, I really, you know, when she says to me, you know, what did I do it for? And I say, I thought you did it for me, Mama. You know, I wanted the audience to feel the loss of Louise.
Yeah.
You know, that like Louise was gone.
Yeah.
And here was now this like almost Frankenstein creation.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great word.
And who like is not the permeable, wanting little girl that she had been. And that's sad in a way.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Great.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So I talk about that in my show, actually, Patty Issues, which is right. about, which I swear I don't mention on every episode of this podcast. But but it's about my relationship with my father, who is crazy. I was adopted by my stepfather when I was a kid. My father was a mess and out of the picture, but gay. Right. And so we obviously had like a difficult, but, you know, intense connection. And after not seeing him for 10 years, I ran into him at Gypsy, where he was sitting on Broadway, literally in the seat behind me. It's so insane. I mean, it sounds so made up, but it really happened.
No, I believe you.
But it's exactly that moment. I mean, that's the final moment of my show. I talk about, I thought you did it for me, Mama. And, you know, and then the line in my show is like, Gypsy, now a success, starring in her own show, holds her and says, "It's okay, Mama. It's okay, Rose."
Yeah.
I mean, and that's literally my moment with my father, like calling him by his name, you know? So, you know, it was so, I think that experience was shared by, you know, because everyone has that, you know, but what is it like to go from something where you're literally, I have to get out of this. You don't want me. This is a disaster.
Yeah.
I'm failing. This, you know, through to this is the greatest theatrical experience. I won a Tony Award. This is a joy and a triumph. These people are my family. I mean, that's such a huge
It was a really
distance.
Big leap. Well, it took, you know, I think it took all parties sort of agreeing on what is meaningful to each other. Mm-hmm. And for me to say, like, I can't handle the way you talk to me. And for him to say, okay, he could have been like, go fuck yourself, you know? Mm-hmm.
And was it really just like, does it turn on a dime? After that,
and
it's a good experience?
Mm-hmm. Yes. He could be very cruel to people.
Yeah.
You know, I remained very close with him through to the end of his life.
Yeah.
But he and I would have really big arguments about the way he would speak to other people.
Oh, interesting. During Gypsy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One in particular, a cast member's mother died, and she did the show that night.
Wow.
And then he came in the next day and, like, reamed her out for how out of it she seemed on stage. And I was like, stop. No. Go away. You don't get to talk to her like that right now.
Wow. Well, that's incredible that you were not only empowered enough to do your work and get through your path, but that you could even be protective and
I've intervene. Always been better at that with other people. I'm always better at being a champion for others than for myself. It's like my lifelong journey and boundaries and things that I'm working on.
Well, now you're a mom, though. Now you have a relationship where that's appropriate.
Totally. Totally. But yeah, so like, and he and I, he would sometimes say things to me. And he'd be like, well, you know, I love you. And I'd be like, yeah, but I would hate to hear how you speak to someone you don't love.
Yeah.
Because that was just horrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he knew it. It's like he knew that he had this cruel side to him. And it's like he didn't love it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had our relationship was I loved him. But I also saw him for who he was.
But that, I guess that relationship in your life would be more unique than in his. I mean, to say that, I think probably anyone that was in his life had some way of getting through that, that he's famously crusty or whatever you want to call
it. Well, I feel like that whole generation, like, of men in power at that time were all cruel. They were cruel to the actors. They were cruel to the dancers, to each other. There was this, like...
Right, you hear about Jerome Robbins.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think that's how they all were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's not like that anymore.
Yeah. Have you found, I mean, that's the exception to the rule in terms of people you've worked with and that being a woman, especially as a leading lady now, you know, in this business. I mean, we're hearing so much of this, like, alleged supposedly that New York Times story that was going to come out about all the sexual harassment, yeah. but somebody's lawyer, you know, crushed it. But,
yeah.
You know, but not necessarily getting into, you know, details or names, but do you find that in general you've had a good experience of being in that, in that dynamic?
Yeah. I mean, look, I definitely had my fair share of, like, older men in power mm-hmm. propositioning me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that I, as a young person, didn't think, oh, right, okay, well, this is what happens.
Yeah.
You know, I wish that there had been a sense of, like, no, what, mm-hmm. why would you say that to me? And now you're in trouble. Instead of, like, oh, this is just part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. that was the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I've been in this business since I was 17 years yeah. old. So, you know, 1997 was a different
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And so I would say in every show that I've been in, there's been one or two instances where I felt very uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
had to set a boundary, which I'm uncomfortable
yeah.
with. Or when I was much younger, just kind of go along with it because
yeah.
I felt like I didn't know that I could say no.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying like, you know, sexually, but like,
right,
but
sure.
just in terms of an uncomfortable dynamic,
yeah.
I didn't know that I could say like, don't say that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I couldn't tell you if it's getting better. I'm getting older. So I'm sure that it's like, I think that men in power tend to seek out younger women,
mm-hmm,
A, because
mm-hmm.
they're very beautiful,
wow.
and B, because they don't know better.
You're the most beautiful woman in the world.
What?
But maybe it is.
No, but
they
like,
won't attack someone who is more established and
yes,
know.
And who has, you know, has more experience.
Right. So. I heard a funny quote from you the other day. Was I reading an interview where you were like, "I'm this." But for a small group of people, I'm the most famous person in the world, and then I'm in L.A. and nobody knows who I am.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just funny that, like, growing up, I never wanted to be famous. I, like, wanted to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I thought I would work my whole life to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, it was, like, handed to me,
yeah.
like, the luckiest girl in the world when I was 18. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, so I'm not... So being Broadway famous is different than being
yeah.
mm-hmm.
TV or film famous.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really funny to me that to some people, they are like, you have changed my life.
Yeah,
I love
right,
you
yeah.
so much.
Yeah.
And then I literally, right after I won the Tony, I had a general meeting with a producer. And she was like, so you live in New York. Do you do plays? And I was like... Oh my God,
Please.
This was set up by my agents. Like, you didn't even
yeah,
bother
yeah.
to Google? Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
So, but in a way, I wouldn't be a good, like, super famous person. I'm too sensitive.
Mm.
I really enjoy my autonomy. Like, I really love being able to walk down the street and maybe have one or two people be like, I love you.
Yeah.
You know, and be like, thank you, and keep moving.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of, like, walking into some place and not being able to function and having, like, my child
mm-hmm.
have her
yeah.
life altered
yeah.
just feels really not
mm-hmm.
what my personality can
right.
handle.
Right.
But still, I think that, you know, you're good on screen and, you know, you keep getting cast in these things and,
yeah.
you know, in the throwing the dice craps game of Hollywood, it's just a matter of time until, you know, you have something that is a long running show or a big movie
yeah.
or something.
I mean, who knows? I'm putting my attention more toward like TV and film right now
mm-hmm.
just because I love Broadway and I will always come back to it.
Sure.
But I do want to sort of stretch my muscles in
mm-hmm.
a different way.
Well, we want you to, you know, be a big hit there and bring it back
Thanks.
And have a bigger, you know, I mean, and
yeah.
you've done a lot of theater. I mean, you know, sometimes I was thinking about like, Sara Ramirez the other day, who's so fabulous on Broadway.
I
mean, just such a huge talent and then just disappeared.
I know.
You know, and has never come back. I mean,
I
I'm sure there are things that she would want to do, you know, that haven't
yeah.
happened. But you know, we've gotten as much Laura Benanti is as we paid for.
So yeah, there's I've been around a lot, so I feel like, you know, I did this movie with Michael Keaton. I'm doing a movie now with Billy Crystal.
Oh, great.
Tommy Kail and I have a project that we're working on together, a television project that we're going out to pitch.
Is this the thing with Rachel Schuker?
Yes.
That sounds, you can't talk about that.
Probably
not. Well, it sounded very cool and very theatrical.
I'm really excited about it. Yeah, so it, like, combines all my loves, which is great.
Love it, love it.
So, you know, I'm really
And that's the project that you are one of the creative forces behind as well.
Yes.
How did that, is that your first time doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I have definitely over the past, like, however many years, tried to, like, create more, like, even silly little, like, online funny videos and, like, hosting the drama desks and writing them.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'm trying to, like...
Well, it seems like it's been a very natural progression for you that's come kind of organically out of what you're doing.
And, like, my cabaret shows, you know, it's like, I don't have a director, I don't have a writer. I do all that with Todd Almond, my musical collaborator.
He's brilliant, yeah.
He is brilliant. So I'm just trying to, as I get older, you know, create my own stuff more instead of just sort of waiting for someone to bring me the perfect.
Right.
Thing. I mean, it's when we talk so much on this podcast about the divas and, you know, artists that we've that have inspired us. And, you know, I know for a lot of us, it's like these big ones are like Barbara Streisand and Bette Midler and Liza Minnelli. And so often when I think about the tragedy of Liza is that she didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and Barbara. Yeah. Has gotten a lot of shit for it and, you know, some of her choices.
Questionable.
But she's been a creative force in a time when women, you know, were not given that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And Bette Midler, you know, is a powerhouse who made so much happen and made so much money, you know.
Yes.
And Liza lives in a condo, you know. She didn't, for all her great artistic triumph and, you know, she didn't step behind the scenes in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she didn't have a, she wasn't at the steering wheel in her own career.
Yeah.
And she didn't, you know, and that hurt her financially and creatively. And, you know, she's in a very different place than those other women are that at one point were exactly her.
Yeah. Peers.
Colleagues. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Peers. Yeah. It's, you know, I think in a weird way, it's like going back to the high school part of me that I was telling you about where I was like, everybody's, you know, a son and we're like making everything a production.
Yeah.
That's always been a part of who I am. But at some point I learned that like good and nice girls don't do that and they just follow rules. And I do think that that is one place where musical theater is a little backwards.
Yeah. Totally.
In that it's like insta performance. You're supposed to like be off book and there's no room for like failure, which is really where you learn the most stuff is like when something doesn't work.
Totally.
And so sort of allowing myself moments to fail, allowing myself to try things, you know, to do straight plays, to do television, to do film and to like, and to create my own stuff. It's like, it's scary, but I want to put myself out there in that way because I think that's actually who I am.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and also not only can you give us more of who you are that way, but the more the creative other people see who you are, the more they can do things that serve that. I mean, so, you know, I think sometimes with like Tina Fey movies, I won't even remember which ones she actually wrote or which ones she was just cast in because she's created a sense for us of what she brings and other people can then fill in some of the blanks.
Yeah. And weirdly, because I'm having such like a complicated relationship with social media right now, but I mean, do credit Twitter with that.
Yes, for sure.
Because people thought of me, like you did, as like a sort of emo soprano. When really,
until
they were like, who is this very funny person?
No, I mean, I remember you doing videos for Theater Mania.
Yeah.
Was it Theater Mania?
Theater Mania.
Yeah, and they were hilarious.
Right.
And I was like, who created this for her? And I think Jamie McGonigal said, oh no, Laura's doing all that. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Laura.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my friend Ashley Van Buren, who was working there at the time, she and I collaborated on those things. But like, we wrote that, I don't know if you saw that feminism video, shampoo video that I wrote for Connie Britton. So like, we wrote it and I directed it and like, just trying to do more things like that.
It's so important. I mean, it's wonderful for Ella to have a mother who does that because it's such a... It's such a natural thing that is modeled for men that we don't even...
Exactly.
We take it for granted. Of course, a guy can do that. If a guy wants to start writing or directing or producing, it's like good for him. It's not breaking through any imposed barrier.
Right.
Well, it seems like, you know, going back to the high school thing about you saying, well, no one else is going to do it, so I guess I'll be president.
Yeah.
You know, choreographing this, you know, we're all dressed as sons. It sounds like you have such a director's eye.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and that's such, like, speaking of Barbra Streisand, it's like you have such an interesting point of view and you're so smart.
Thank you.
And I think that's so, that speaks so much to your character and your wisdom. Even, you know, you got into the business in a big way when you were 17, you know, and you were able, you have reached a point now where you're like, it's okay to fail. And it would have been so easy just to not do that and to be swept up in it and, you know.
Thank you.
Talking about that in musical theater, the no room for fail, even beyond necessarily, like, the gender thing. Like, I was thinking about another show you were incredible in, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Peppa, it's me again, why aren't you picking up the phone? It's like my brain is gonna melt if I don't talk to you. I've got a problem in the shower and I've only got a minute. Cause the problem in the shower is this guy that I've been dating, named Malik. He's what's the word? Swarthy, like a desert chic. And he's been here in my apartment for about a week. I met him down at Cafe Sombra and I know you think I'm overly romantic, but you wouldn't believe the connection we had. Like, immediately I was ready for him to meet my mom. Like, I could feel my heart exploding like some kind of bomb, which is ironic. Because actually, I think he literally has some kind of... Anyway, Grandpa, happy birthday. Say hello to Grandma and be sure and think, oh, that was him.
Do you think in a different process, not a Broadway theater, that show, you know, if it had been a regional, you know, somewhere safer, could have gone the distance?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we... We had very little time to put it together. I think the show that Ben Brantley saw was the second time we'd ever done it that way.
Right.
So we froze the show on a Saturday matinee, and he came and saw the Saturday night.
Yeah.
No, that's never going to be good.
Right.
You know, and especially when you're talking about something like Pedro Almodovar, which is like the tone is so specific.
Specific,
try to bring that to stage and to an American audience. I just wish we had gone out of town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really do. I think it, because people who saw, like, the show in the beginning and then saw it at the end were like, this feels like a completely different show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, I think that, I get it. There's a lot of money at stake.
Yeah.
And for the audience, too, Broadway is so prohibitively expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to spend your money to see something, you want it to be something that you know you're going to... have a good time,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is so, it's so problematic.
It really is. It's theater for a rich audience.
Yeah.
And
they're not the best,
arbiters of taste.
The rich people in our country should not be in charge of anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Another thing creative that you've done, that I'm interested in how it got started is playing Melania Trump.
Yeah.
Speaking of the evil rich people in our country.
I know.
How did that come about?
So I was on Stephen's show just promoting She Loves Me, and he, like, put up a picture of me and a picture of her and pointed out our resemblance, which, like, I still actually don't really see, unless I'm making the face.
Right.
But,
well, the face starts to unsee.
And so then I sort of made the face, and then that was it. And then, like, months later, it was the Republican National Convention, and she did her famously plagiarized Michelle Obama speech, and I woke up to, like... a flurry of emails and phone calls from Colbert Show being like, do you want to put together an impression?
Oh,
and I was actually 5 hours away at my grandma's house in Delaware.
Wow.
I'd just gotten there the night before.
Oh,
I literally, like, got there at, like, midnight, went to sleep, woke up at 7 and was like, what? And then went all, drove back 5 hours to New York.
God.
And it was live. So it was a live show. Wow. So we were like, it's not even like, if it doesn't play, we can cut it. And then it ended up being this, like, very zeitgeisty sort of viral sensation. And it's, like, it's a double-edged sword for sure. Where on one hand, I'm like, ugh, I feel like it was finally the thing that made people go, she is a comedian. But also, now I'm... people refer to me as, like, Melania Trump impersonator. And I'm like, oh, man,
oh,
no.
That's so funny.
That is just, like, a tiny fraction of, like, what I'm capable of. So I'm so grateful for it. I love doing it. It's really fun. But I also, like, don't want that to be the first line of my obituary.
Yes. Well, I do not expect that to be the case. That's so funny. What about... Stephen Colbert, like, he's somebody that has a little bit of a Broadway bent to him.
He's amazing.
Like, could you see him, like, stepping into, like, actually, like, do a musical?
Yeah, I mean, didn't he do one at City Center?
He did Company.
Company.
At Philharmonic with Patty.
Right.
But, you know, that was, like, a week.
Yeah.
2 weeks of rehearsal.
I mean, he's so busy right now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but I don't know. I mean, he's so multifaceted
yeah.
that I think anything he wanted to do, honestly, he could do.
He's
he came to see My Fair Lady, and he was could not be more generous. He was like crying.
Oh.
And he was like, I can't believe I get to do anything with you. It was really, really nice. He's a very generous person. He's a very kind man mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. smart.
Mm.
Oh my God, he's so smart.
Yeah, he is smart.
I love being in the room with people like that.
So going back to like then My Fair Lady and yeah. your musical influences, like what for you is the overlap besides mm-hmm. just you of Tori Amos and My Fair Lady? Like, I mean, you know, because I hear those things both in your voice.
Thank you.
But do you find a middle ground, or is it just kind of like a subliminal osmosis kind of thing?
In my singing voice?
Yeah, well, or even just music for you, even as a fan. Like, where do you connect? Or what is it in common with those things? I don't really know what I'm asking.
I feel like it's the heart in the voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tori Amos has her heart in her voice.
Yeah.
When you go.
You know, Brandi Carlile has her heart in her mm-hmm. voice.
I climbed across the mountain tops. Swam all across the ocean blue. Across all the lands and I broke all rules. And baby, I broke them all for you. Oh, because even when I was flat broke,
anybody who's really like giving me their soul through their singing, I'm into whatever genre it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Lizzo. Lizzo has her heart in her voice.
Yeah.
So I'm not so much into, like, I'm not a genre snob, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But for me, like, if I hear, like, super auto-tuned or somebody who's just, like, slick
too perfect
production, yeah. I'm not interested in it, you
yeah.
know? I want something that feels like art. I want mm-hmm, something that feels mm-hmm. like someone's, like, laying their soul out for me.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Joni Mitchell earlier. And,
yeah.
you know, I love Joni, and I love all eras of Joni.
Me
you know,
too.
She starts out with that pure kind of like
crystalline soprano
voice.
I know.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions. I recall, I really don't know clouds.
But then, like, I also just as much love, like, her most recent stuff, which
me
is,
too.
Like, just, like, a smoker's
I
cough,
know.
You know?
Yeah,
it's just
totally.
Like,
yeah.
It's just, like, this weathered voice, but it just tells so much story, and it just,
talk
know,
about
that,
A to Z.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It shows the journey, and I'm, like, I eat it up.
Me
like,
too.
That later version of Both Sides.
Oh, I was just thinking
yeah.
that!
Yes, yeah. yes.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
I looked at life from both sides. I recall, I really don't know life at all.
which, you know, both sides now is so...
It's such a perfect song for that. Louise, yeah.
It's like everything we've been talking
I
about.
I sing that at my concert.
Oh, yeah, so love it. Perfect. So are you looking to do more of that kind of work? Do you
concerts all over the country, actually.
Oh, do you do like symphony kind of things?
Yeah, I do symphonies, but Todd Almond and I go with our show all over the place. Yeah. We have two shows. We had one called In Constant Search of the Right Kind of Attention.
That's the album.
Mm-hmm. And now we have one called Tales from Soprano Isle.
Oh, I've got to see that one. Have you done that one in town yet?
We've done it for like 2 years. Yeah. Now we have to do a new one. We did one at the Carlisle when I was pregnant. That's where we debuted it.
Nice.
And it's my favorite show that we've done for sure. But now we're actually talking about doing something maybe a little bit more scripted for our next one that feels a little bit more like a show.
Sure, yeah. It would be great to see you do something like that.
Yeah, so we're in like the phases.
Did he do Sherry Renee Scott's show?
He did.
He did. Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one with Norbert as well.
I didn't see that one. I heard it was incredible.
Yeah.
They like sold out like 2 months at 54 Below.
And yeah. Then.
What are there shows like that have been especially meaningful to you? Cabaret shows or solo pieces like that?
You know, I love Patty's show, obviously. Mm-hmm. Chita Rivera has an incredible show.
Did you see any of that like stuff when you were just starting out?
I didn't, because I was always working.
Sure,
You know, I was like literally always working. So,
like, do you ever get to see Elaine Stritch?
No. I did a reading with her when I was 20 of what's it called?
So the Royal Family?
Yes.
Oh, this and Bill Finn adaptation of the Coffin Heart play.
And I have a thing where if I see blood, I faint. And I walked in and she was checking her glucose and I passed out. That's how I met her.
That's amazing.
She was so pissed.
I'm sure.
She terrified me.
Yeah, she was
so scared of her.
Scary. That's so funny.
I was like, nice. And I remember waking up and Jerry Zaks just looking at me like,
it's over.
I'm just going to hate you now.
Yeah. I've been so curious about that show all these years. And
I know,
it's
it was
never
so good.
Happened. Was it good?
It was so good. I think it was a rights issue.
You guys and Carolee Carmello, is that right? Yeah.
Wow. Brian Batt, yeah.
Wow, Brian Batt, amazing.
I love Brian Batt.
Well, this is a good transition, I guess. We play a game with our guests.
Okay.
Which is a variation on Mary Fuck Kill.
Okay.
But it's Dolly Concert Kill.
Okay.
So we'll give you three performers, and you can choose one of them to see as Dolly Levi, one of them to see in concert, and one to kill.
Okay.
So should we do Julie Andrews, Patti LuPone, and Elaine Stritch?
Yeah. Well, I kill Elaine Stritch. I watch Patti do Dolly.
Yeah.
And then I watch Julie Andrews in the concert.
Did you ever see Julie do anything?
No. So before you came here, Ella likes to scroll through all the Elizas and listen to all of them. She's like, I want to hear Mommy singing Loverly. And then I put it on and she's like, now Julie Andrews? And I put on Julie Andrews and she's like, now Audrey Hepburn. And I'm like, you mean Marnie Nixon? And then she goes, that is Julie Andrews. And I'm like, well, no, it's Marnie Nixon, but she's two, so I'll let it slide. But Pat was like, who's your favorite singer? And sort of begrudgingly, she was like, Mom.
I know.
But that's so good. You're raising her right with Marnie Nixon. I didn't know about that until college.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew about it because my mom. But like, it's just so funny to me. Like, I don't push this on her. I try to put on like kids music, like Raffi or whatever. I'll put on pop music and she's like, no, Echo, off. She hates it. She only wants to listen.
Echo, off.
Yeah. And then today, Echo kept playing something and she was like, you need to listen to me.
Oh my God. I love her.
She's so funny.
Well, that's incredible. I'm sure she's going to be a force. Whatever she gets involved in, look out. Oh. And you're a force. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys. I love you so much. Thank you.
This is so much fun.
This was fun.
Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week for four-time Tony-winning lighting designer Kevin Adams, here to talk about the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack.
Other upcoming guests include America's coast-to-coast Dolly Levi Broadway superstar Carolee Carmello, and our special Winter in a Summer Town mini-season, featuring the most fabulous talents from Provincetown and Fire Island, including Faith Prince, Pixie Aventura, and Varla Jean Merman.
Oh, grrr. This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Special thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A is an ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.